We have enough BS technology. There's enough terrible technology. There are really, really powerful problems that the government and law enforcement is trying to solve that they really need help solving. Go solve those. Spend time trying to solve those, and you will get this really interesting thing. And you know when you're hitting the nail on the head when you start getting this thing called the pull.
But government can create the conditions necessary for businesses to expand and hire more workers.
Welcome to Civic Thinker, the podcast for fearless doers, GovTech innovators, and social entrepreneurs striving to reshape our world.
I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Together, we'll unravel the mysteries, dismantle the barriers, and equip you with the tools to conquer the odds and achieve success.
The answer is clear. For the people to win, politics as usual must lose.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you.
Because it's so hard that if you don't, any rational person would give up.
Ask what you can do for your country.
Hey there, Matt Moulter again here with Civic Thinker, and we've got a great episode. We are going to talk to another entrepreneur. So I know I'm an entrepreneur. I'm in there doing the GovTech thing, but it's always great to hear from others. And we've got a real special one here. A special one, if you reflect back, maybe episode we had a while back with the Dor Lutz, you know, about the spirit of what is a social entrepreneur? What is a GovTech, you know, innovator? And one of the points she made there is there are people that are not primarily motivated by money. And I think that spirit is going to come out today with our guests today, and hopefully help lift you up if you're having a tough day, because it couldn't have come at a better time for me, because I have been having a couple of tough days. And I'll give you an example. Recently, we were working with trying to close an agency, a city, and this process has just gone on for forever. It's been a 6-month long process. I mean, 6 months since they were interested, right? Like, this isn't a cold lead. 6 months, things went quiet. Nothing ever happened. Maybe there's some confusion or something. And then we see them at a conference, kick things off again. Awesome. And we get moving through the process, and it has just been, and this is a large city in the South, and it has just been one roadblock after another. You know, after our main users, you know, everybody that our key decision makers and everything have all decided they want this product, it has just been one hurdle after another. For example, I'll give you a couple examples of some of the hurdles. So there's a mix up on the pricing. Sure enough, we gave them two quotes explaining two different things. They want the thing that costs more, but they thought it was at the lower price point. Of course. So there's this big discussion about pricing. So we have to clear the air there and take the hit. We'll just take the hit, right? It's our fault for not communicating it clearly. We did communicate it, but you know, they're busy people. Maybe they just didn't notice or didn't realize what was going on. And we could have been more clear. Well, then, you know, as we go through the purchasing process, well, now it's like, well, you don't have a registered agent in our state, and you need to pay our state business registration fees. You know, this is already after we've docked the price down. And then we go back and forth on the legal contract and all these little nuanced things that we've got to sign off on. And then sure enough, after all that work, we get everything done and we get the paperwork through, and the paperwork has the wrong attachment, the wrong quote attached. And it's just like, oh, we got to start through this whole thing again. And there's just been a gazillion back and forths, all involving our client. So they get to see the chaos that's going on behind. You try and get the client away from that if you can. There's one tip for you. If you're dealing with purchasing or finance or anybody, you know, try and remove your client, unless you're doing everything, you know, in the good, and they can see that you're working hard and doing your best. But oftentimes they don't have a clue about that kind of stuff. So my preference is to just try and take them out of the conversation to make their life easier. But anyway, we finally got that through, but it has just been a grind, and it has taken grit. And if we were having to pay legal fees for all this legal back and forth, because we're going back and forth with their lawyers, right? If we had to pay legal fees, it's like we've lost money on this deal, you know, 10 times over at this point with the amount of time and energy it's taken. That's why these big companies have to charge so much. This is the bureaucracy is just trying to wear us down. And it really takes that grit and that knowledge that what we're building and what we're doing is going to make not only this community better, but it's going to serve the people out there doing that hard job. It's going to make their life a lot easier too. And that's the motivation. That's what keeps you going. And I know if we do a good job here, they're going to tell their friends, and hopefully we'll get some great referrals off of that and that kind of thing. Even though we're probably losing money in the beginning here, and you know that grit, that getting through it. And by the way, I hear it's even worse, you know, in terms of the bureaucracy and the layers and everything. I hear it's even worse in other countries. So maybe perspective is in order. Maybe things aren't that bad here. It sure feels that way sometimes. And that's where today's guest is going to really help us out. Cornelius George, he goes by Corn. He's an old friend of mine. He's fresh into this GovTech journey. He's been doing it for 4 years now. He just got accepted into an accelerator. So exciting times for him and his company. And if you're feeling down, if you need a little motivation, listen to this and you'll get that spirit and hopefully be a little more uplifted and give you that energy to keep grinding and keep going. So Cornelius, perhaps we can start with the opportunity you saw with Chuck Lab.
Yeah. So it wasn't necessarily an opportunity I saw, right? So, I mean, when you look at it, you know, I had one officer, a friend of mine, tell me that he had this problem, right? And then I gradually started asking other officers. I started, you know, reaching out to people in his network, and then started building my own network of officers. And the more and more I did that, the more I realized that this is a problem that hadn't been addressed in every form of law enforcement, right? So when I after doing some investigation, what I realized is that at every layer of law enforcement, there are stockpiles of audio and video files that someone either has to ignore or has to go listen to, put some headphones on, listen to, and try to find evidence in. And in more cases than not, they're actually ignoring it. Because, like, for example, the FBI estimates less than 4% of all the jail phone calls in this country are monitored. And that's not because people don't want to or people don't care. They want to. They care. There's a lot of valuable intelligence in this. That's why you have 4% of it even, right? But there's just so much. Like, for example, you know, in Marion County, the county where I live in Indianapolis, there's 850 hours per day of jail phone calls, right? And that's just one of the different types of files that they have. So I realized that across the country, across the world, actually, this is a problem that spans the globe. There's massive amounts of audio information that is not being tapped into because law enforcement does not have the ability, the resources to do it, because it's only being done manually today. Now, that problem is a technology problem at the end of the day.
It is. And why do you think you're the one to solve it?
You know, it's interesting because I actually had, this is funny because when I talk to investors a lot, they're like, well, you were never a cop. So how do you know? They think because you're a cop, that's an advantage. And the interesting thing is that I talked to, and I'm not going to say the name or anything like that, but I talked to someone in the state of New York. That's a big state. If you can figure out who I talked to, then good for you. But I talked to someone in New York, and one of the questions they asked me was, have I ever been in law enforcement? And I was like, no. They were like, good, then I'll work with you. And I was confused by that for a moment. And that's because majority of law enforcement technology are done by former cops, right? You yourself know that as well, right? But I'm a technology guy, you know, that's why I'm the right person to solve this. I'm a technology guy. I hate inefficiencies all over the place, right? And I see an inefficiency in just this one feature, this one problem in law enforcement. And I see several other inefficiencies in technologies in law enforcement across the board. I know I've talked to people that in 2023 are still using MS-DOS for some of their technologies, right? So the reason why I'm the right person to solve this problem for law enforcement is because, quite frankly, I only look at the problem. I don't see all of my face is not so close to it where I think about all these other things. I think about the problem, and this is a technology problem. And overall, it's about how do we, you know, the way I see it and the thing that bothered me the most when I got into this space is that I literally have better technology on my phone to play online poker than a detective does to save and solve, save the lives of other people and solve crimes. Like, that's insane, right? That is insane. That is insanity, and that needs to change. And unfortunately, you know, I may make some enemies with some of the other companies that, that work in law enforcement, but they don't seem to care. You know, technology that law enforcement has goes years, sometimes decades without any updates. And that's just because there aren't people like me that aren't in law enforcement building things for law enforcement. We need more people that come from the technology sector to say, hey, you know what? These guys need help. They need technology. Let's go build some cool stuff.
I love that. I think you're right on the tech stuff. What made my previous company and hopefully what we're doing today successful, that these projects I'm working on, is I was a tech guy first. You know, I was in, you know, I got my master's in HCI, and you know, I was very tech first, and law enforcement just came along with it. So I'm with you on the tech first positioning. I think that's going to be great. It's going to help you build a great product. I think it's interesting, Courtney, like, you started from the private sector and now you've jumped over to government. Before you jumped over, what did you think going into government was going to be like when you first started?
You know, everybody's seen, I think it's specific. So it's like, it's specific because I went into like this law enforcement. I'm still in the private sector because I'm privately owned my own company, right? But I'm working with people in the public sector. And I think I watched a lot of TV. I'm a crime junkie, right? I love shows like that. And you know, Law and Order is my bit. CSI is my thing. You know, I love those shows. And I think the biggest shock to my system, and I keep on harping on this, was that I thought technology was so much better, man. I thought cops had the coolest technology in the entire world. And, you know, like we were talking about earlier, I know a guy that I remember I was talking to several months ago that was like, yeah, I still have to use MS-DOS for one of the programs that we use. And I'm like, you know how crazy that is? I'm 42 years old. I have conversations with some of my employees about that. I told them that exact same story. And they were looking at me like I just said words that don't even make sense, because they were like, what? And I was like, I looked at their face and I was like, you guys don't know what MS-DOS is, right? And they're like, no. So think about that right now, right? Like, you know, that was the biggest shock to my system, that there are still people in this world using technology that is so old that millennials don't even know what it means.
What about from a business standpoint? Did you have expectations about what having a business that serves government would be like prior to when you started?
I'm an idiot. And I just believe that even the way how businesses do business with law, with government, I think there's ways that we can change some of that, right? So I had expectations of it being extremely inefficient. I had expectations of it being difficult. I had expectations of it being almost like, you know, getting punched in the face over and over again by Mike Tyson. The reality is that I don't think that that's the case. I think there's a lot of people trying to do a really good job of streamlining the process in a lot of spaces. I think that it's just that we don't know. When you first get into this space, you don't know all that you know. But I think after a while of spending time and navigating and understanding what it means to do business with government, you start sharpening up that, you start closing up that gap in terms of the distance and the difficulty that it takes to get some of that stuff done. So yeah, my expectation was that it was going to be a lot harder than it is. It's still difficult. But it definitely is not as hard as I thought it was going to be. And also, I think that there are lots of opportunities to make it easier that hasn't been explored yet. And I think part of the reason for that is because a lot of the people that sell into government, especially law enforcement, are not former technology people, right? And technology people tend to just think of things as, how can we make this more efficiently?
Oh, plenty of room for efficiency there, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're just trying to help the entrepreneurs navigate it. You know, like it is what it is in a lot of places. And sure, we'd love to change it, and hopefully it does change. But you've been doing this, I think we're it's October 2023. You started Chuck Lab about 4 years ago. What has the journey been like?
It's been like going to hell and heaven and back, and then going back there twice, and then coming back again, and then all kinds of stuff. It's been amazing. It's been amazing. It's been tumultuous. It's been incredible. And you want to add in something crazy in that? Like I said, I'm a black guy making software technology for law enforcement. Can you imagine what my 2020 was like? right? Not only on top of COVID, but we had all the civil unrest that was happening, you know. I'm not a political guy like that. I mean, I have my political leanings, but like at the end of the day, that's my personal point of view. I don't need to put that on other people, but I had a lot of people from each side, one side telling me this, that. And, you know, at the end of the day, that was really tough for me because all I care about is this. There is a world out there. There are evil people out in the world trying to make the world bad. Everyone wants those evil people not to do that. How do we make it harder for them to do that, right? And then on top of that, too, there are innocent people out there that for whatever reason get caught up in the legal system, right? How do we give them an opportunity for them to be free, right? And so you look at our technology is not just one that's going to put people in jail. It's going to help exonerate people because you're going to be putting the right people in jail, right? And so this journey in of itself, when we started in 2019, it's been, you know, it started with me really first having to get out of my comfort zone. My entire Rolodex was people in technology and people in finance, right? I had to go build a whole new community of cops, right? And I was able to really understand the complexities of everything that was going on from a law enforcement perspective and from a Black person's perspective. And what I come to realize is that both sides, so to speak, are speaking the same thing.
If you could go back and tell yourself something now that you have 4 years of knowledge behind you and you've been through those ups and downs, heaven and hell, back and forth a couple of times, what would you say to yourself? What lessons learned would you want to share?
Wow. I guess I should say not. I'm going to share two of them. One is the one that I would tell myself. You're built for this. You're built for this. Nothing's going to be too tough that you won't handle. You're built for this. That's the thing I would tell myself. But that's me because I know me. What I would tell anyone that's trying to look at, you know, working with law enforcement and working within the government is this. We have enough BS technology. There's enough terrible technology. There are really, really powerful problems that the government and law enforcement is trying to solve that they really need help solving. Go solve those. Spend time trying to solve those, and you will get this really interesting thing. And you know when you're hitting the nail on the head when you start getting this thing called a pull. And I'll explain what that means. And I didn't even notice that until we started getting it recently, where people are calling you, asking you to use your product or trying to use your product because they heard it from somebody that heard it from somebody else that heard it from someone else. The reason why that is important is because every single cop and every single level that I've talked to have technology issues and things like that they really wish somebody would solve. And if you go and solve it for them, the gratitude that they have means that they're going to tell every single person about it.
Learning some of those lessons now. What? All right. So when you started this, you could have gone any direction. You could have gone, you know, started with federal, started with local, started with state or whatever. How did you pick where you started? And would you do the same thing again?
Yeah, I have no choice. I have no choice because, you know, we talked about it a little bit in kind of my intro story. I didn't know I was going to be in law enforcement. I didn't know I was going to solve this problem. I didn't know these were going to be the customers I work with. I didn't know any of these things. The market pulled me here. Right. So, like I said, right, you know, I started the business, you know, with the idea, the concept that there are three questions, really. If you focus your business to being able to answer yes to those three questions, you're never going to be unsuccessful, barring something crazy happening. And that is the problem big enough that solving it creates economic value? That's your first question, right? That's your market. You know, are there enough people that have the problem? Is it bad enough that they care to change it? Number two is, you know, are we solving the problem in the most efficient way possible? And number three, are we making it easy as possible for our customers to partner with us to solve the problem? That's your sales. Is your price too high? You know, is your delivery easy and all those different things? And then so I took that and I created four for myself that I needed, right? Four things that I needed was one, you know, passion is my number one thing. If you ever meet me in person, I spill out passion just out of my essence, right? This is who I am. I'm just passionate about things. So I had to be something I was passionate about.
There's no doubt.
So I had to be something I was passionate about. Number two, right? My primary purpose, I live my entire life to make the world a better place and to help people. So if I was going to do a venture, it had to do that as well, right? It had to do that because I was going to spend most of my life on it. Number three, simplicity and scalability always wins. So if you're going to build something, try to focus on something that you can solve a problem with simplicity and scalability. And number four, it had to have a pathway to profitability.
You're 4 years into your business. Mm-hmm. Why go to an accelerator now?
Well, why go to an accelerator now? Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, why not, right? I mean, so one, and you know this as well as I know this, right? There are very, and you didn't do it the normal way when you did it the first time, right? But there are very few companies. There are very few tech startups that go that Silicon Valley way that actually make technology for law enforcement. Like most investors I talk to, they've never talked to a tech company that make technology for law enforcement. So why not? If my goal ultimately is to try to socialize other tech founders that this is a space where we can go and create great things and solve great problems for those in law enforcement, for my mission, my overall mission, it made perfect sense. But let's be serious here. It's TechStars, right? I'm in the TechStars Accelerator, right? They have a lower acceptance rate than Harvard University. And why do people go to Harvard? It's not necessarily for the education, great education, but that network. I have a vast network of people that I can learn from, I can speak to, that have done this, that have done things like this, that have sold to the government in different layers, people that have made the mistakes that I'm probably going to be making here in the next couple of months, that can tell me what I need to do to make sure that I don't make those mistakes going forward. So for me, I don't think there's a time when you're past being able to get an accelerator. It's just finding out the right accelerator for where you are as a company and if it can help you grow as a person as well. And that's exactly where I needed. And that's exactly where I'm in right now.
You know, if we were to talk again in 2 years, what would you want the situation to be like? What would you have hoped you've achieved by then?
In 2 years, I'll be perfectly candid. In 2 years, in the space of those helping law enforcement investigators with audio, I want to have complete domination over that market. And not because of, not on some like, I want to be able to compete and knock everybody out. No, I want to be the best solution, right, that is solving the problem in the most efficient way possible and making it as easy as possible for our customers to partner with us, so much so that it becomes a no-brainer that everyone looks to us. To put it in a better perspective, I want our name. I want people to start saying, hey, did you CrimeMine that? Because our technology is called CrimeMiner. I want people to start using CrimeMine as a verb, an adjective, right? I'm going to do some CrimeMining to that thing or whatever the case may be. I want it to be a common word. That's what I want in 2 years.
Gordon, this has been great. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the podcast here.
Hey, man, I really appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to seeing where you guys take this podcast and how where you take your business as well, man.
Hey, and that wraps us up for today. I hope that you learned something from this episode and that you enjoyed listening to it. If you would, please go to the website civicthinker.com and enter your email address. That way you can be in the loop if we push out more content or maybe someday do a future event. Oh, and we'd love to hear your suggestions on topics as well. So drop us a line at podcast@civicthinker.com and let us know if there's any questions or areas you'd like us to explore further.